Around Comics, Episode 7. Thank you for listening to another episode of Around Comics, where every week we assemble a new panel to discuss topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and let me introduce you to this week's panel. On your iPod, from left to right, as always, he is my partner in crime and the producer of the show. He is Brian Salazar.
Hello, everyone.
And for our next guest, whenever we last saw him, he had fallen into a pit of molten lava at the end of episode one. Now he's back to continue his plan for world domination. The manager of Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, Mr. Mark Beatty.
How you doing?
Excellent. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. This week, we are continuing our four-week look into the world of comics. Last week, we talked about the state of the DCU, and this week, we are moving things over to the House of Ideas. So we're talking about Marvel Comics. Today, we're going to take a look at some of the important storylines and characters that are shaping the mainstream Marvel Universe. Now, I will warn the listeners that this will be a show with plenty of spoilers, as we're going to try and unravel Marvel continuity. I'd like to start with what I believe is the beginning of the current Marvel state of affairs, and that is Disassembled, and in particular, Avengers Disassembled. Sal, why don't you go ahead and start us off and give us a quick synopsis of what happened in Avengers Disassembled.
Avengers Disassembled is basically the story of the worst day in Avengers history. It starts off with Jack of Hearts exploding, killing Ant-Man. Then the Vision crashes a Quinjet into the Avengers mansion. Then they're attacked by Ultron robots, and the She-Hulk goes nuts, tearing the Vision in half. A bunch of other people are wasted, I think. And then finally Hawkeye gets blown up while destroying a Kree warship. In the end, it's all revealed that it was the Scarlet Witch who was behind these seemingly random attacks. She's been driven insane by the loss of her children years earlier, which are really just magical constructs that she had created with her subconscious or something. And then she eventually is defeated by Doctor Strange, who kind of comes in to save the day. And then immediately following that, Magneto, her father, swoops in and takes her off, and everyone stands around going, okay. And that led into, I think it was Avengers Aftermath or something. But that was basically the plot of Disassembled.
And at the end, Magneto takes Wanda to Genosha to try and get Professor X to see if he can help get her sanity back. And basically, Tony Stark says that he can't afford to keep the Avengers afloat anymore, and the Avengers disassemble, basically. And that leads us off into several other storylines, but there was one book that kind of came out of the ashes of New Avengers that, well, it's not, or out of Assembled, which is not really important to mainstream continuity, and that is New Avengers. And I know that, Mark, you've been reading New Avengers.
You mean Young Avengers?
Or New Avengers, Young Avengers.
I've been reading both Avengers, of them, so.
give us a look at Young Avengers.
Give us a look at Young Avengers. See, it's basically a group of youngsters who see what happened to the Avengers and see if the Avengers are disassembled. There's no heroes out there, so they come together to try to kind of take their place. Basically a Marvel version of the Teen Titans. There's a version of... there's actually a version of Hawkeye. It's a female. There's a Ant-Man's daughter who basically turns into a giant girl. She can shrink and change her size, go to a giant, go to an ant-sized character. There's a Captain America-ish, Bucky-ish kind of character, Kid Hulk, Kid Thor. I actually like the book. I think it's been done pretty well. It's getting very interesting right now.
But that, and there was, that, Iron, base, there was Iron Lad also. That was,
oh, Iron Lad too, yeah, which
turned out to be
a young version of Kang, which was very interesting. I thought it was kind of cool.
With Vision armor or something.
No, the Vision is what brought them all together, actually. It was like the Vision's like
operating system.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very fun series. And like I said, it's not really crucial to mainstream continuity, but it is really nice that it came out of the ashes of Avengers Disassembled. And if you haven't read it, pick it up. It is a very fun read, especially if you're like a Teen Titans fan. Moving on from Young Avengers, somewhere I think starting before Avengers Disassembled, they don't give you an exact start date, but I think kind of the next important storyline that happens in the Marvel U is Secret War. And besides being insanely late for each issue, which I think caused a lot of problems with not continuity, but the timeline with everything, the basic storyline for Secret War was Nick Fury goes behind the backs of his superiors to form a group of superheroes, attack a country that Latveria. Is funding Latveria, that is funding terrorists. They basically wage a secret war on this country. You fast forward a year into the future, and these terrorists come back to seek revenge. And to not give away a ton of the story, basically what Secret War boiled down to was that Nick Fury basically had to go underground and basically run away from S.H.I.E.L.D. and his position as the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. Would you guys say that's a pretty fair synopsis of that series?
Yeah, you know, it was hard to sort of keep with that because it was so spread out, and also, you know, it was also retold sort of in The Pulse and also in New Avengers from different perspectives to some degree. It all kind of led into Luke Cage being in a coma in New York, you know, afterwards, and you kept seeing the same scenes in The Pulse and in New Avengers. So it was a little hard to figure out what that whole storyline was or what it was going to lead to, and I don't know if they've, at this point, sort of changed all that, and you still haven't really seen any sort of resolution from that storyline. But, yeah, I mean, basically, Nick Fury's in hiding, and the Latverian government is not happy.
Yeah, we'll come back actually to Nick Fury in a second, but since Mark is a manager of a comic store, I wanted to talk about Secret War and how Marvel is releasing their books in a timely or untimely fashion, and how that, in the view of the fan, is kind of screwing with continuity. Mark, I know that Secret War was a real headache for you guys in the local comic shop arena. You want to elaborate on your experience with that?
It was just frustrating how late that book was overall. It was supposed to be, a quarterly book to begin with? Mm-hmm. And it couldn't even keep up with that schedule. It ended up being, 6 or 8 months late total, I think. And then that last issue was kind of a letdown. And the fact that it was just so late, the art was repeated page over page. It was amazing. It was like we waited all this time for an issue that just kind of sucked.
Well, it was overall beautifully repeated artwork. I really like the painted style. But
it is beautifully repeated, but you can only see so many pictures of Angela Jolie as the Black Widow anyways.
Would you agree that...
But sales... Go ahead.
But would you agree that storyline in particular kind of really jumbled up the timeline of what Marvel was trying to do as a mainstream story through the universe?
Definitely. It definitely did. It just... You got lost... In that issue, Nick Fury was still there. You end up finding out why he's gone, the whole situation. But in all the other books, he's already disappeared, and there's a woman running S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, which you have no idea why. Which,
yeah,
you know,
no other book touches on the subject.
I wanted to talk about Nick Fury here, because as I see what Marvel has done, in really the last 2 years, they have put Nick Fury as kind of the center cog in the Marvel Universe, as being a very central figure that you know, pulls strings on different superheroes, and he's kind of the guy that knows what's going on. Sal, what do you see as Nick Fury's place in the Marvel Universe right now?
Well, I think, you know, they're certainly trying to give him a bigger piece of the pie, and he's been touching a lot of different lives and a lot of different books, and I think it almost seemed like it sort of stemmed from the Ultimate Universe, because that Nick Fury was involved in everything, and he, you know, had his fingers on everybody to some degree. So it almost seems like they took that concept from the Ultimate Universe and are trying to make this Nick Fury, you know, the 616 Nick Fury, more like that. And it makes sense, I think, you know, a character like that would be head of the, you know, the world's largest security agency would certainly, you know, be tied to every major superhero or powered being in the country, and would have his fingers on everything. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him once, you know, sort of this civil... I'm assuming he's going to have a big part in Civil War, and that's sort of where he's going to come back. And I'm sure he'll, you know... It'll be interesting to see what happens once that's all sort of played out and where his place will be. Sure, because if you look at, like, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm sure the next segment is going to be, you know, House of M, you know, his character in that was more of a, you know, revolutionary, almost a terrorist type character. So you might be seeing the same sort of thing in Civil War, where he's now fighting against the government that he held, you know, upheld for so long.
I think that's probably where I would see him on that side of the fence, and we'll get to Civil War. But a couple of things I love about Nick Fury in the Marvel Universe is that, number one, if he shows up in any comic book, it usually makes sense, whether it's Punisher or Wolverine or Avengers or X-Men, because he does have that connection throughout the universe. So he's a very convenient middle point that you can connect just about any story with. But what I also like right now is that there's a certain amount of chaos in the universe, and I see that directly linked to the fact that Nick Fury is not the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I think that Civil War is going to play on that. Move on from Nick, and we'll get to House of M in just a second, but just prior to House of M, we leave disassembled, and the new Avengers get formed, and wanted to have Mark talk a little bit about new Avengers and how he sees that new team coming together and how it's impacting Marvel continuity.
Can you say it one more time, the last part? I'm sorry about that.
Oh, to see out. How new Avengers and that new team is affecting Marvel continuity as far as, you know, what characters are interacting with what other characters right now.
The way new Avengers came together, I thought was a little odd, because, for one thing, Iron Man goes and says he can't afford the team, and then he brings the team back together, basically. They came together kind of the original way that the original Avengers did. You know, a big problem happens, a bunch of heroes coming together to help alleviate the problem. The prison break, basically. And that kind of forms the new Avengers, but then all of a sudden Iron Man's got all kinds of money to put everybody up and put them in a nice new brand new building, and it just seemed kind of hokey, because he, not even basically what, a month ago, he says he has no cash to do anything. So I thought the coming together was a little odd. I mean, the breakup and the coming together was a little odd. But overall, I have liked the book, except for one storyline, which I've told Chris I hated, the whole Echo thing. I really like the series. I mean, it just keeps it. That part ticked me off, but I kept reading, and now I'm really liking it. As far as, how do you mean, as far as it affects the rest of the universe, you're saying?
Well, what I see is that they are setting up a lot of character friendships, i.e. Iron Man and Spider-Man. They've brought Wolverine into the new Avengers, and so there's a connection with the X-Men there, and it just seems like new Avengers has become a platform that they're going to jump into Civil War, so it makes a fairly easy way to have all of the titles have a central connection.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. But what's the main part of the question?
Oh, just your thoughts on the book.
I think they're doing it carefully. I think they are making alliances all over the place. And they've alluded to this Illuminati, this, you know, the five or six guys that are kind of controlling everything in the background. So it does make sense. If they're doing kind of what DC has been doing. They're tying everything together now. All the heroes, all the different people making, you know, just picking sides, basically, for the upcoming Civil War, which is still vague.
Yes, which is we'll get to the road to Civil War, which right now is what Marvel is leading up to. Leaving New Avengers, the big event from last year was House of M and all of the House of M tie-ins. Why I don't feel that the tie-ins were hugely important to continuity, it was just kind of wrapping into that event. Have Sal give us just a brief look at House of M and how that kind of changed what was going on in the universe.
Well, House of M was a... it was basically an alternate universe created by the Scarlet Witch. She has gone completely insane at this point. She has not been able to been helped by Magneto or Professor X. And to try and deal with everything, she decides to give basically the people she knows everything they want and to change the entire universe to fit what they would most want, I guess, in the hopes of that then they would leave her alone. And she also, you know, ends up getting what, you know, what she wants the most is, you know, her children, that thing. And so House of M was this world where in 1979 Magneto was attacked by Sentinels over Manhattan. At the end of the attack, he had revealed that there was this international anti-mutant conspiracy involving Richard Nixon. The main result of that was that he was given control of Genosha and was made the leader of the world's mutants. This led to society changing radically, where mutants were the oppressors, and non-mutants were a minority who were dealing with racism, and it branched off into almost every major book. There were some exceptions, but you know, Captain America, Spider-Man, and just about every book, you know, really got that treatment, and it was in one way or another they were involved in the House of M world for a short period of time. At the end of that series, which it ran through once again, I think it ran through the Pulse mostly, and then the House of M main series. Okay. There's a girl, and I can't remember her name off the top of my head. A young girl,
Layla.
She is able to make everyone remember how everything was, and she starts with the various heroes, and there's this small group of rebels that are fighting against the House of M, which is, you know, Magneto and this upper class mutant government body, basically. And she starts getting all these other heroes to remember to basically fight against Magneto and to turn everything back, and at the end Wanda ends up putting everything back sort of the way it was,
except for three very important words.
Right, no more mutants. And and that's where we're led into 198, X-Men 198, Decimation, that was the initial, I think there was a one-shot Decimation, the aftermath of House of M. And then we were led into 198 and the other Son of M and Generation M, I think is the other title going on right now. And the world was reduced. There are now only 198 mutants left in the world. Where at one, you know, before House of M, before, you know, there were, I don't know, they never really said, but there were at least hundreds of thousands, if not millions, and now there are 198. Some very popular and you know, noteworthy characters. I know Iceman no longer has his powers, and who else? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. But
the Blob was one of my favorites.
Yeah. There were some interesting scenes with different characters that had lost their powers.
Which, you know, there is a question about that, because 198 was one of the titles, and I know that Mark is reading this. Now, 198 comes out, and I was under the impression that there were only 198 mutants left. Is that what it is, or is it 198 mutants that have gone to the mutant camp at Xavier's? I'm unclear about that.
It's the 198 that have gone to Xavier's, from what I understand. I thought the same thing. I thought originally it was like there's only 198 of them left. It's like, no, these are the ones that are on the compound.
Yeah, but basically what it came down to was that there was like 1% of the mutants left, and there were a couple million, so there's, you know, 100,000 of them or something.
But right, running around that no one knows about.
Yeah, it's greatly reduced, but the one, Sal, I had the same deal, where I thought, okay, there's only 198 mutants, which I think would have actually made it more interesting.
AroundComics.com, your source for discussion, news, and reviews about your favorite comics and creators. New podcasts available every Monday. Go to www.aroundcomics.com.
But moving on from Decimation, I want to take a look at Spider-Man the Other. You know, the mutants are over here, they're doing their things, but Spider-Man has kind of gone through his own deal. So, Sal, I know that you've kind of kept up with the Other. What's going on over there?
Well, I don't have a complete first-hand knowledge of that. I did start to read that series, and then I ended up stopping reading it. I'm actually waiting for the hardcover. I have that on order. So, but basically, I think the Other was sort of two things they were trying to accomplish with that. One, give Spidey a new suit, which they did, to the chagrin and joy of fans everywhere. And also to strengthen the relationship between Peter Parker and Tony Stark, to lead into Civil War.
Civil War.
Basically, with the Other, Peter is sick. He has something wrong with him, and it took about four or five issues of 12 to really ever tell you what it was, and I won't spoil anything, but there's something wrong with him. His body is changing. He ends up actually becoming a lot more powerful, but he can't control it. He's having a hard time controlling it. There's some new characters that are presented in it and everything. And basically at the end of it, like I said, Tony Stark designs a Iron Man like costume for him, so that he can control these new powers and abilities that he has, and that's sort of where we're at with it now. So,
where we have the new spider armor,
right? And he can glide and has three metal arms coming out of his back and all sorts.
Well, I think the biggest thing was that was really solidifying the Tony Stark Peter Parker relationship, and I'll throw this over to Mark. This leads us into Illuminati and Civil War. Going to the local comic shop aspect, how excited are you guys for Civil War coming up?
I'm really excited about it. It looks great. I saw the preview in Wizard, the little, six or eight pager, and anytime you can kill Speedball off, I'm a big fan of that, because he's such a great character.
You just made a lot of enemies out there, sir.
I hope so. No, it looks really good. I mean, the art looked fantastic. The story looks interesting. I like the whole idea of these, you know, two super-powered factions forming on either side of this argument. And it looks really interesting. It looks different than what they've done before, you know? It's not just the good guys versus the bad guys. It's good guys versus good guys.
And it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, there's going to be bad guys that are going to team up with some of the good guys.
Right. And anything that has Mark Millar on it, I'm big on, because Ultimates is quite possibly the best superhero book out there.
Well, that's another thing I was going to touch on, is that Mark Millar is the writer for Civil War. I think it's interesting that we may have come to an end of Brian Bendis writing the big events. It seems that he's doing very well on his books, but the big events, they said that, you know, Mark Millar might be the guy to write these.
I completely agree. I can't see anybody else writing it. I'm not a huge fan of Bendis. A couple of his books I think are fantastic. I think Powers is a great book, but a lot of his books are just too damn wordy sometimes.
He seems to handle the individual character extremely well, but whenever you get the huge groups of characters, Bendis is great at dialogue. Big events aren't normally dialogue driven.
Well, and I also think though, I mean, he took on a huge amount of projects for the whole, you know, House of M and Decimation and everything else. But he also did get kind of screwed by the whole Secret War thing, because I think that messed up the plan so bad. He kind of had to fly by the seat of his pants for a few months trying to make things work that weren't initially part of the plan to some degree.
You're trying to create a huge mainstream continuity through a series of events, and if a couple of those events get off a timeline, it just screws it to hell. And I can see how there was a lot of, you know, hair pulling at Marvel.
Now with the Illuminati, that's basically that is supposed to be Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, Iron Man, Tony Stark, Namor, Black Bolt, Doctor Strange, and Professor X, correct? They're the Illuminati, and they're...
Right.
I mean, basically, the story is sort of, they've been meeting in secret for years, and nobody's known about these, you know, these extremely powerful people. I mean, they're not only powerful, you know, individuals in the sense of, you know, superpowers, but in the world, I mean, you know, Tony Stark's a billionaire, and Doctor Strange is you know, it seems like from each segment of, you know, of their world, they're some of the most powerful beings out there, professionally as well as, you know, in the superhero land.
Sure, each one of them is kind of the head or leader of a segment of that universe.
You mm-hmm.
know, Professor X is obviously the voice and the face of mutants on the planet.
So it's going to be interesting where they, you know, how that ties. I know it's going to have a tie into Planet Hulk, because you saw that in the first issue of the Planet Hulk arc, that they, you know, they were involved in that. And you're going to see how that all sort of pans out.
Now, is Planet Hulk, is that going to wrap back around and become a part of Civil War?
I believe so, because, you know, I think, well, it's going to be, you know, a year from now when that series ends. I'm assuming at some point he's coming back, you know, here, and he's not going to be happy.
He is not going to be,
and
I don't know why.
There's going to be some people that are going to be on his shit list, if you will.
Well, I saw a preview, and there was actually a news conference this last week, and another resurgence of a character is going to be Thor coming back, maybe not Thor, but Thor's hammer.
Thor's hammer is back, but it looks like it might be in Doctor Doom's hands.
Nice.
Which could be interesting.
Absolutely.
Since it has to be somebody who's worthy of picking it up.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, you can do a lot with magic.
Only so much. It's enchanted. I mean, literally, the only guy I've ever seen pick it up is Captain America.
Well, anything's possible.
He has a lot of the mystic power, so maybe he figures a way out. That'll be fun. That actually sounds interesting to me.
Well, I know they want to make that a huge part of the road to Civil War, and I know that, you know, that's starting with the Fantastic Four, and I know they want them to be a huge part of it as well, because they're the, you know, the first family and all of Marvel. So I know, you know, that's sort of the beginning point of this whole Civil War thing, which I gotta say, you know, after House of M and Decimation and the whole Son of M and all that, I am excited about Civil War. It does look like they're getting back on track and have things thought out a little better, and, you know, I'm excited about Civil War, but...
I'm interested, and I don't think that we've talked about the actual divide, and that is that the government basically says that you can come to us, tell us who you are, and it's a superhero registration act. One of the things I think will be interesting is what side of the fence mutants fall on, because the government's trying to regulate for, what, 20 years in comics.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be that's certainly going to be a huge part of the beginning of it is, you know, what side are you on? You know, what side is Cap on? What side is Tony Stark on? And you know, you saw it in Amazing Spider-Man with Tony trying to get, Peter Parker's loyalty, basically, and because he knows what's coming up.
To do this.
Yeah.
And from what I've heard, Spider-Man's supposed to be the center linchpin for the whole thing. He plays a huge part in the whole storyline. I mean, that's the fact that he's, you know, Iron Man's trying to get him on his side, but I guess his decision is like the main focal point.
The climax of Civil War is going to be when Peter Parker makes his decision.
Apparently so. That's one of the things I've heard, so I'm sure there's much more to it, but...
That would be...
Well, we look at the Marvel U, and we'll kind of go back over what we just talked about, is that the Avengers disassembled, they reassembled, Nick Fury isn't the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. anymore, there are drastically fewer mutants than there used to be, Spider-Man is going to be a pivotal figure in what's going on, and Civil War is set to take place between the heroes. Is that a pretty fair assessment of where they are in, you know, the overall continuity right now?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, me too.
I did want to mention one thing we didn't touch on some of the other titles that are going on right now. You know, there's X-Men 198, but there's also Son of M, which I haven't been reading. But the one title I have been really enjoying is Generation M, written by Paul Jenkins, and it's you know, it's stories about the mutants that have lost their powers, and it follows a writer, a journalist, telling these stories, and it's really well written and interesting, and it really has nothing to do with the continuity or, you know, there's no huge events involved in it, other than it's taking place at the same time. It doesn't really have anything to do with the main storyline of this, but it's really well done, and if you're not reading it, you might want to take a look at it, because I've been enjoying it a lot, and it's just well written, well crafted stories.
I fully agree.
You said the same thing.
Yeah, it's really good. It doesn't really have anything to do with it. Just it's the good and bad of certain people losing their powers. And she writes an article about the mutant diaries.
Mm-hmm.
And there's somebody killing off mutants. Or people that were mutants.
Ex-mutants.
They're killing them off. And he's contacted this reporter. He knows where she lives. So there is a backstory to it, but it doesn't have a whole lot to do with the whole Civil War thing.
And Paul Jenkins' wife just had a baby, so he needs the money.
Oh, he's such a good guy.
So maybe you should finish Mythos X-Men.
Yeah, well, that's another one. I'm waiting for that.
Yeah, it's... I think that kind of... takes a look at the Marvel big mainstream topics, but I wanted to talk for a brief second on some of my favorite kind of like secondary titles that are definitely a part of the Marvel U, but kind of get pushed off to the side through the major continuity. And I've got five of them written down here. The ones that I'm really liking are Captain America, Wolverine, Punisher, Runaways, and then one that's outside of the U, but that's Powers, as under the Icon imprint, which is still done by Marvel. Mark, you are a huge Captain America fan. How do you like Captain America right now?
It's terrible. It's the worst I've ever read. It's quite possibly the best Captain America story that I've ever read. I don't think I've seen anybody handle Captain America this well before. I mean, the last time I was this interested in Captain America, I mean, the stories, was when, you know, Roger Stern and John Byrne were doing it. They did a short spurt that had, you know, Baron Blood, where Captain America decapitated Baron Blood. I mean, they were great stories, great art and everything else, but, and this is just fantastic. Now, I may be the only guy who doesn't have a problem with Bucky coming back from the dead.
Yeah.
Except that he's in Wolverine now.
Some people want all of their books to fall into continuity, and then there are other people that say, well, I want the mainstream books to fall into continuity, but I want the solo title to have their own stories. Do you want Captain America to get wrapped into the Civil War story?
Yeah. I'm fine with it. I like that. I like the books. Otherwise, when are you reading this? When did this happen? I don't like that. I like to have some kind of continuity running through all the titles. It drives me crazy otherwise.
Yeah, I'm completely opposite. I would hate for the Captain America book to get ruined by having to conform to this whole Civil War thing. I don't have a problem with it being outside of it.
Form.
Well, look at the House of M titles and how, you know, you had the House of M Cap, which was just a kind of a throw-in on a great story arc, had nothing to do with it, and was taken completely out of, you know, context. But they just sort of had to do it because it had to be tied into House of M. I don't want, you know, Ed Brubaker to have to, you know, sit here and... It's too hard to do it, in my opinion. It's too difficult to do for any length of time where you're trying to get all these writers to link into the same storyline and either, A, you know, make it completely, you know, sort of blasé, or B, make it so that it's just, you know, you saw it with Secret Wars 2. You know, it was like you had all these titles with the, you know, Secret Wars 2 logo on the cover, but really you might have three panels in the book that mention something about Secret Wars 2 and really had nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Or you'd see the Beyonder in the background buying like a loaf of bread or something.
Exactly, you know what I mean? It's like, and I just would hate for something so good as this, you know, to get screwed up because they have to try and conform it to. I mean, it can be done, and it can be done well, and I think certainly a guy like Ed Brubaker has the ability to do that, but I don't know that everybody does, and I'd hate to see stuff get really screwed up. You know, I think they're doing it in some ways. I mean, Planet Hulk's one way of doing it. You know, they're going to have a year of storylines that has nothing to do with Civil War, but, at, you know, in the beginning of the year, they're going to, you know, kind of bookend it with Civil War, you know, with the whole Civil War and the Illuminati.
Yeah, but
thing.
The Cap is going to be a central figure in Civil War.
He is, and I understand, but I don't know. I just don't care about continuity all that much. I mean, outside of the main title, you know,
Here's some of my reasoning, is that if you ignore it completely, that he just goes along in his own little book and does his own little stories, but then you have him being a pinnacle character in a big storyline like Civil War, and the status quo gets changed completely, it needs to be shown in the other book. Needs to be some kind of repercussion. Good or bad, you can always ignore it later, like the Spider-Man clone, or,
I think that's the problem that they keep running into, and they're always going to run into this problem, is because you're either going to have to not write stories where anything changes, and it always gets, you know, you always hit that reset button at the end of an arc, because you got to leave it, you know, status quo, or at some point you have to try and, you know, every story ever written is going to have to, you know, be laden with continuity, and every writer is going to have to come in and research, you know, 25, 30, 40, 50 years of history to make sure they don't do something on a, you know, it's, for me, I pick up a comic and I read it and it's a story and I take it completely out of context with anything else, unless it's a miniseries or, you know, it's that series or, but even arc to arc, it's like, you know, I'm not paying attention to what happened 5 years ago in some Captain America story. I could care less. Unless it's relevant now to the story that I'm reading, who cares? What difference does it make? It doesn't make it any more enjoyable for me. Write a good story, and I'll read it, and I don't care if it's, you know, out of continuity or if it, you know... I just don't understand that whole mentality.
There's no way for me to voice it. I mean, my reasoning was already said. I mean... I agree with you on your side. A good story is a good story. It doesn't need its continuity for certain titles. But if you're going to use pinnacle characters like that, I think you need to show something. I'm not saying you need to do the Secret War 2 crossover type thing. But if, let's say, Cap kills someone, we're just going to ignore that in every other book?
No, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, I guess if it's something that, you know, fundamentally, different to the character, you certainly have to...
Well, how about something much...
But I think I don't have a problem with that, but when we get mired in detail, in minutia of every little tiny thing that, you know, we worry about it, that's when it sort of, to me, gets out of control.
No, I agree. I think you can be a little more vague on certain things, but the larger picture needs to be seen.
I mean, I was talking to Chris about this earlier in the week. It was a perfect example is like the Ultimate Universe. You know, they restarted all these characters from scratch so that they could have a clean continuity. But you already have problems with continuity now because you have Ultimate, you know, in Ultimate, or in the Ultimates, Season 2, you have the government being overthrown, and yet you don't see that in any other book. It's a pretty big event that you don't see in Ultimate X-Men or Ultimate Spider-Man or Ultimate Fantastic
Four. Maybe not yet.
Well,
exactly.
Once again, you may get a mention of it, but you're not going to get it as a fully, you know, enveloped storyline. But I don't care because you know what? I like the Ultimates title. I like what's happening in Ultimate X-Men. I like what's happening in Ultimate Spider-Man. I don't care that they're supposed to be living next to each other. Whatever, they're different titles.
Well, let's move on from Captain America and our debate that could go on forever. Wolverine, Punisher, both kind of similar books, but I love what's going on in Wolverine, but I want to focus on Punisher as that Nick Fury has made appearances in and shows that he can cross over from being in Avengers, but then going over to a Max title like Punisher, and he's still the same character, but you see how much influence he has on that universe.
Well, Garth Ennis should certainly write a Nick Fury book, because his appearance in The Punisher was some of the best Nick Fury stuff.
He is writing one.
Is he?
Yeah, Fury.
He is. Oh, great.
That's not very good.
I didn't know that.
That doesn't count. That was such a letdown for me.
Oh, you. That's right. You did say that was not very good. I haven't read that.
I did not like that, and I had such high expectations.
Well, you know, a German officer doesn't leave an American officer. He kills everybody else but leaves him.
It's like, yes, you are an American officer. I will leave you here alive. Go back and tell everyone that we are very strong and powerful. It's like, I'm sorry, that doesn't happen.
I didn't read it, obviously, because I wouldn't be clamoring for a Garth Ennis Nick Fury that already exists.
It should have been good, and it was, yeah. You know, we're running a little short on time because we have some emails to get to. I want to just say that Runaways is another great secondary title that Marvel's putting out, and under the Icon imprint, Powers. I was talking to Sal just before the show about this. Powers is as good now as it has ever been. The current story arc is some of the best stuff that that Bendis is writing right now.
I completely agree with you on that.
Still my favorite Bendis book. I that was the one sort of that started it all for me, liking Bendis, and still probably my favorite Bendis book. I'll also mention, though, Daredevil is another title.
Oh.
That we should.
How can I forget Daredevil?
Yeah, I mean Brubaker, Lark, and it's only been two issues, but one issue. Yeah, one issue, but it looks like that's going to be as good, if not better, than the Bendis Maleev stuff.
And we've talked about it before. Brubaker has taken over Uncanny X-Men. It'll be the first time I buy Uncanny in about 15 years.
Yeah, Ed has taken over everything. I mean, they really, it's funny because, you know, in when he was writing for DC, it's like he couldn't get a job, you know, writing much of anything, and Marvel, you know, snagged him and put him on everything they can possibly manage, and he seems to be shining.
It's golden right now.
Yeah.
Well, we do have a listener email from one of our buddies on the forum, Brian Seals. He says, Dear Chris, Sal, and the Around Comics panel, I enjoyed your talk about the DCU and Infinite Crisis, but I think Marvel has a crisis all its own. In the past, I didn't think there was a need for Marvel to deal with any problematic continuity issues. There was the Age of Apocalypse, 2099, the What If stories, but for me, there wasn't too much confusion about what was or was not a part of canon. Now, in addition to these, you have Heroes Reborn, M2, and the Ultimate Universes. Don't even ask me if the future stories in Guardians of the Galaxy count, because I have no idea. What I do know is that I can tell the difference between Ultimate Cap, the Heroes Reborn Cap, and the official Earth 616 Cap. But can a new reader? In an industry that's desperately trying to gain new readership, is even just the Ultimate Cap too much? I think it is. Has a continuity crisis developed in Marvel? And then he goes on and says, P.S., tell Tom Caters I said Captain Cold Blows. So thank you for your email, Brian. I wanted to use that to segue into the Ultimate Universe, which, if you talk continuity, Marvel officially has two universes that they're keeping tied together. Mark, how do you like the Ultimate Universe as its own continuity?
I like the Ultimate Universe books for the most part. What Brian said about the their continuity is already getting screwed up is completely right, because in Ultimates you've got that amazing storyline going on, and then you read Ultimate Spider-Man, Peter's still having, you know, girlfriend issues. So there's some continuity problems there, but overall I think the books are pretty well done. With Kirkman writing Ultimate X-Men right now, those last couple of issues have been just great. I do like Ultimate Spider-Man for the most part, except for the, you know, every three or four issues where he's just him sitting in his room chatting with either Mary Jane or whatever other character they've got him chatting with.
Ultimate FF is the best FF I've ever read.
I was getting to that one because I just started reading them monthly, because I was reading them in trade format for the longest time, and I started picking up when Greg Land came on and the whole two universes meeting, and boy, that book is good right now. I can't stop reading it. I think it's Millar writing that also again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's getting to end that. Him and Land.
I may want to have his child soon.
He's definitely talented. He's got to be up there in my top five writers, certainly.
Oh, I'm thrilled to death that he has taken over on Civil War. That is his baby. If that is not good, I'm going to be really disappointed.
You'd be surprised.
I think he's going to do a great job. I love the Ultimate Universe. It's kind of what got me back into comics, and kind of like they're using Nick Fury in the 616 universe, like Brian said earlier, that, you know, he is a center cog. He touches on each one of the books, and I think that, you know, the Ultimate Universe, if you're going to start a new universe, that is the way to do it. I think they've done a
Going back to that email, I will say that I think I agree that things are confusing for new readers. I had a friend that was starting to get into comics and started. He liked Spider-Man from the movies and wanted to buy some comics and had no clue where to begin. He didn't know, you know, the difference between Ultimate Spider-Man and MK Spider-Man and The Amazing Spider-Man. He didn't know if they were the same characters in the same world or what was going on.
There's a difference?
Well,
and then
I mean, there is, I guess, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it is confusing to some degree if you haven't, you know, been involved in it for a while. If you're just getting into it, you know, just walking into a comic shop, hopefully, you know, you can get some help there. But
I heard that Mark actually tries to intentionally confuse people.
I'd probably believe that. I think I've heard the same,
but.
You know, once again, it goes back to, I think, the comic industry, and, you know, their intentions are to sell as many comics today as they possibly can, not necessarily trying to find new readers. And the precedent, you know, is set that they're trying to sell comics, not necessarily trying to sell them to new readers. They're trying to sell them to their existing fan base.
Well, I think with the Ultimate Universe was kind of for that purpose, to get new readers in, starting new so they could pick it up and start reading, you know, right then. And with all the trades that come out, you can literally catch up so quickly and fairly inexpensively that I think it was, I mean, that was their whole purpose, I think, with the Ultimate Universe, was to get new readers. They haven't done it since, but...
Well, I think it was a failed experiment then in that regard.
Because it caused the regular guys to buy more books.
Right. Or people buying, maybe people buying DC books to buy Marvel books, or people that hadn't bought Spider-Man to buy Spider-Man, but for someone that hadn't read comics ever, they didn't know anything about the Ultimate line, or that it was coming out. I mean, there was no, you know, there was no presentation of that to the general public.
Sure.
That people would know that, so.
Well, Mark, do you find that there are readers out there that stay away from the 616 Marvel books and they just read Ultimates?
I've actually got one guy who only buys the Ultimate books, but for the most part they usually, if they buy the Ultimate books, they're always buying the regular title also. You know, they buy Ultimate Spider-Man, they're buying Amazing Spider-Man and Marvel Knights Spider-Man. Okay, they just kind of buy everything.
So you know, they had the one story in Ultimate FF where they kind of teased that the two universes were going to have a crossover. Do you want them to ever do that, or do you want them to keep them completely separate?
It would probably be really interesting just from you know, a reading standpoint. I mean, it probably would be, and I'm sure it would boost sales, and you'd get just as many people buying the darn books, but do you really need it? Not necessarily. And besides, then you really are getting to the point where, if you start blending all the universes, you are going to have a crisis. There's going to be issues with that, I think.
Listen to AroundComics.com. It's not just for 12-year-old boys; it's for 13-year-old boys too.
Hey, we also got a listener voicemail. Someone from the forum left us a voicemail on this subject, so why don't we listen to that now?
Hi guys, my name is Joe and I post as Justice on the forum. I'm a longtime listener, 6 episodes. I think you guys are doing a great job. I see your next show is about the current state of Marvel, and I thought I'd send in my 2 cents because I've been a Marvel fan since the 1970s, and I've read most of the core titles as a result of the release of the Essentials line. Now, while I read DC, and especially the Superman titles, I view myself only as a visitor to that universe. The Marvel Universe is my home. It's where my heart is. And that's why, for the most part, I stayed with Marvel through the 90s when it all hit the fan. And while I continue to be a big Marvel fan, I'm not sure I like the way their current universe is being managed. You see, in my mind, what makes the Marvel Universe great is its rich history and respect for continuity. In fact, in some ways it can be said that Marvel actually created the concept of continuity for the comic book. Now, I'm sure that'll be argued on the message board for years to come. But you see, Stan and Steve and Jack and Jean and Roy wanted a universe where their heroes knew each other. A real world where people had real problems and causes had effects, and more importantly, actions had consequences. For example, if Hawkeye broke his arm in Avengers, he would have a cast on during his guest spot in Amazing Spider-Man. And when the Human Torch switched to that hideous red suit that he wore through Strange Tales, he had that same suit for his appearances in Fantastic Four. They had their own universe, and this brave new world was dubbed the Marvel Universe. This Marvel Universe only grew through the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, and Marvel's respect for continuity always was there. For this reason, it's not surprising to find that Marvel is credited with the first company-wide crossovers. First, there was Contest of Champions, and later there was the first Secret Wars. Each of these stories took place in continuity. In fact, other companies were just trying to play catch-up. Some think that DC did their original Crisis just to clean up their characters so that they could have a tighter continuity. However, lately there's been a change. A few years ago, Joe Quesada announced what he referred to as a policy of loose continuity. Apparently, the logic behind this policy was to allow Marvel to woo famous TV and film writers, some of which who have never read a comic book, to write their books without being bogged down by the past. Joe said he made a choice. He chose good stories over continuity. Unfortunately, he did not realize there was a third option. Good stories in continuity. Instead, Marvel went down the slippery slope of loose continuity. Unfortunately, they've been more steadily ignoring that continuity each year. Loose is rapidly becoming non-existent. Now don't get me wrong, there are exceptions. For example, Brian Michael Bendis keeps a very tight continuity between his books. I guess you could call it the Bendisverse. And for a while, at least, there was at least editorial continuity. For example, the Avengers and the X-Men were also consistent. But that's actually been lacking. And even the editorial continuity seems to be gone among these books. Now, I'm sure I could come up with 100 examples of Marvel's disrespect for continuity. But I won't, because I don't want to bore you, number one. And number two, I'm afraid I'm going to spoil something. You know, but Marvel has a problem with, say, how the Hulk acts from book to book, or even where he is, and also the current occupation of Nick Fury. But if you need an example, I'll point you to a really old Fantastic Four thing, and it's something that I don't think will spoil anything. A couple years ago, Fantastic Four appeared in their own book, where they were rich superheroes living in the Baxter Building. However, at the same time, they appeared in Marvel Knights 4, and they were all poor. Apparently their accountant or something had stolen all their money, and they were forced to take odd jobs. Sue became a teacher, Johnny became a fireman, Ben a construction worker. They were poor. Now, currently, apparently they've lost their money again. Well, three-quarters of them are poor. Okay. Why do I say three-quarters of them? Because it turns out that in the current storyline, Reed Richards put aside a large sum of money for Ben Grimm. He always had it. It's funny, they didn't remember that the last time all four of them lost the job. Maybe Ben wouldn't have had to work as a construction worker, or he could have bailed out his friends. But apparently they'd forgotten that they had done that story, or they just didn't care. Now, I merely gave that as an example, and I know people may disagree with me, and they may think I'm overreacting, and if you don't care about it as much as I do, then you're luckier than I, because it really, really bugged me. Okay, now before you go and accuse me of Marvel bashing, I am, first and foremost, a Marvel zombie. I stayed with Marvel through the New Universe, 2099, Marvel Scope, and even the resurgence of Millie the Model. I still buy far too many crappy X-Men titles in the hope that one of them will be able to recreate that Claremont Byrne magic, which ironically enough wasn't even recreated when Claremont and Byrne came back. I buy every crossover book because at one time these crossovers mattered. If somebody lost a leg in X-Force, you can bet they would be hopping in Excalibur. I would hate it if I picked up Excalibur and I didn't know why they were hopping. But if Marvel doesn't care, why should I? Why did I need to buy Spider-Man House of M, which greatly affected the life of Peter Parker, when they ignored the consequences in the other? Similarly, why should I buy Civil War or Decimation when the events are irrelevant? I wonder how many of these depowered or even dead mutants are going to show up next year in some random X characters miniseries, and you can bet they'll be at full strength. I think the fact that I care about the Marvel Universe and its denizen is what actually makes me more annoyed about this. The fans don't work for Marvel, yet for some reason, it seems like we care about these characters more than they do. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not asking for super strict continuity, where everything that was ever written actually is the way it was written. I know Captain America's meeting with JFK really doesn't make sense, nor Iron Man's involvement in Vietnam, or even the fact that the Submariner had some strange electric eel power in the 60s. That just wouldn't work. These would hamstring the writers into writing characters who are at least 70 years old. I'm merely asking the company to respect the fans who have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars buying their books, and that actually bother to remember what happened years before. Hell, sometimes Marvel doesn't even remember what happened the month before. Is it really that difficult to get it right? If we, the fans, can pay attention to these things, why don't they? You know what? If Joe Quesada's listening, I'll do it for free. He doesn't even need to comp me on the books. Just give me a call before things come out and ask me if people are alive or dead or where they are. Okay, my rant is over. I'll end this on a high note. On the plus side, Marvel stories have been excellent recently. Bendis' Daredevil run was brilliant, and the follow-up looks just as good. Young Avengers and Runaways are good new books which feature new characters, which is something the industry needs to survive. In that vein, the Ultimate Universe and the Marvel Adventures have basically remade the classics for another generation. and have actually translated into an Ultimates movie. Moreover, Marvel has some great stuff on the horizon. Civil War looks like it's going to be a good story, and Annihilation gives you more cosmic bang for your buck. However, despite all these good things on the horizon, they should be careful, because there is competition out there. And DC has retooled their universe to be more consistent. Actually, more like the old Marvel universe. I believe Identity Crisis and Infinite Crisis are a direct benefit of this care and attention. As a result, they've actually outsold Marvel for the first time in years, based on the diamond numbers. This means I think Marvel should rethink their strategy. I'm not saying they shouldn't entice more readers. I'm just saying they should stop trying to expand their base at the expense of their longtime fans. Otherwise, many Marvel fans may end up saying, "Make mine DC." Well, those are my two cents. I guess what else can I say except Excelsior.
You're listening to Around Comics. It's like talking to your best friend's sister, and she's hot.
Want to do final thoughts on Marvel? Sal, why don't you give me your final thoughts on the U?
It's horrible. No, you know, I'm a Marvel fan. I have always been a Marvel fan, and, you know, ups and downs, things they do right, things they do wrong. I think that ultimately it comes down to the characters. I love the characters. I have always been fascinated with characters like Cap and Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and the Hulk and Wolverine and all these great characters. And I think no matter what, I always will come back to them in some sense. You know, when it's good, I'll buy it. When it's not so good, I won't. And but I'll always sort of be hanging around it. I think that the last year hasn't been great. It hasn't been bad. There's been some really good stuff. And there's been some really, you know, kind of big mistakes, I think, too. But it's been fun, generally. And, you know, as far as you know, artists, they have, you know, a huge house of artists now that are putting out some tremendous work. And I think Civil War is getting me, you know, much more interested in what's going on in the general universe. And I'm excited for that. Mark Millar and you know what Ed Brubaker's doing with the three titles he's going to be working on. I'm certainly excited about that. And the Ultimate line, I've always read that stuff and will continue to. I think that's some of the best stuff they're doing. So, you know, overall, I think, you know, Marvel's doing what they're doing, and I like a lot of it. I don't like all of it, but I think they're heading in the right direction again.
Yeah, I would agree, and so I won't go into a long dissertation on it. I will also mention that Marvel is putting a push to get their cosmic characters back with the whole Annihilation, and I'm looking forward to that. But I'm going to throw it over to Mark. What do you think of Marvel right now?
I have been a Marvel guy my entire life. I grew up reading Marvel. I mean, I've told Chris, I actually collect Captain America items, like statues, figures. I mean, everything from, I've got kid socks that grip on the bottom. I've got cups, cars. I mean, I'm a Cap fan. I'm a Marvel Comics fan. Always have been. And they are getting back to where I think they need to be. But they've been, I kind of think they're abusing their list. I mean, their readers basically by being so late on so many books. Some books not even showing up after the first issue. Or second or third, you know, Spider-Man Black Cat was a little over two years ago, and they finally finished it. Acted like they're doing you a favor.
That is certainly a problem I have. That, you know, they keep signing these big name writers and stuff, television writers, and then these guys can't get issues out, you know, on time. It's like, hey, there's plenty of writers out there. Get somebody that can get something out on time.
Be on time.
Exactly. Ultimate Iron Man. That one took forever. It seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
And I was briefly not even aware that it finished.
Did it end? I saw the hardcover.
I got the hardcover. It says that it is 1 through 5, but it felt like there was a 6th issue coming out. I got lost.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you either because I don't think it had an ending.
I kept waiting for the 6th issue to come out.
I don't know.
Bullseye Target 1 issue came out, never to be seen again. I mean, they're incredibly late with so many of their books, and yet we sit there and we keep buying them. Secret War, perfect example. I mean, you know, I knew it would basically sell out even though it was 6 or 8 months late, and it did. We wait for them. We put up with it. We don't teach them a lesson by not buying that book because it's 6 months late. So they seem to be doing a little better job. They seem to be trying to get it out, but they still have so many books that they're late on. I mean, Iron Man right now. Warren Ellis is writing it. You've got Granoff doing the art. Fantastic art. I've never seen, you know, a better meld of computerized art and character I've never seen. Yet, every issue has got to be 2 or 3 months late, it feels like. So
yeah, it looks like the continuity is actually pretty good. The product is pretty good. It's just their timing sucks.
Yeah, well, their continuity is a little... that whole Warren Ellis storyline actually should have been out before Iron Man The Inevitable came out, because it actually... it's that version of Iron Man. What happens to him in that Warren Ellis storyline is this Iron Man in Inevitable. So they're still having issues here and there. I'm sure they're trying. They do have fantastic art, great writers. I mean, some of the coolest product coming out right now. But it just seems like they just really need to concentrate on shipping dates and actually trying to meet them.
Listen to a RoundComics.com podcast new every Monday. For once, you won't be lying to your parents when you tell them you're not looking at porn.
These are your comic industry headlines for the week of March 6, 2006. Viper Comics announces ongoing Dead at 17 series. Top indie creator Josh Howard returns to Viper. The adventures of Nara Kilday have come to a close, but danger still falls on the town of Darlington Hills. Things get kicked off with Free Comic Book Day this May as a new 10-page Dead at 17 story appears in the Viper Comics Presents anthology. The new series will debut in August and promises to introduce the world to a new cast of Darlington Hills residents. Viper Comics Presents is a free book available at comic shops everywhere on May 6th as part of the annual Free Comic Book Day event. In addition to the new Dead at 17 story, the anthology will contain excerpts from the upcoming Viper titles Emily Edison, A Bit of Haywire, and A Dummy's Guide to Danger. Canadian comic book publisher Septagon Studios, Inc. is seeking artwork from sequential artists and cover illustrators to work on their upcoming line of books. Septagon Studios, Inc. will be accepting artwork sample submissions through their forums located at forums.septagonstudios.com. Visit aroundcomics.com for more details. Gaiman and Avery to adapt Black Hole. If all goes according to plan, Neil Gaiman and Roger Avery, who collaborated on the screenplay for Robert Zemeckis' screen capture version of Beowulf, will be scripting an adaptation of Charles Burns' graphic novel Black Hole for Paramount and director Alexander Aja. Gaiman virtually announced the project on his website in early February, and in a recent interview, Alexander Aja confirmed that he and Gaiman were writing the script and talked about the approach that the filmmakers were taking to the adaptation of Burns' masterful saga of teenage despair. California Science Center to host Marvel Superheroes Exhibition. The California Science Center will host the world premiere of Marvel Superheroes Science Exhibition on March 26th. Marvel Superheroes, which runs through September 4th, will immerse visitors in electrifying sights, sounds, and sensations of the Marvel Universe while they explore how some of the most loved comic book heroes and villains bring science into their world. The Marvel Superhero Science Exhibition features over 9,000 square feet of interactive experiences developed, designed, and fabricated by Yellow Brick Holman Exhibition Incorporated in partnership with the Ontario Science Center. After its debut in Los Angeles, the Ontario Science Center will tour Marvel superheroes to other science centers and museums in North America. Infinite Crisis 5 gets second printing. As Infinite Crisis nears its stunning conclusion, DC Comics announces that the sold-out fifth issue is going back to press for a second printing. Infinite Crisis number 5 reprints the story by Jeff Johns, with art by Phil Jimenez, Jerry Ordway, Ivan Rice, Andy Lanning, and Art Thiebert. The new printing features a pencils-only version of the issue's cover by George Perez. eBay auction to benefit the Center for Cartoon Studies. The Center for Cartoon Studies, the CCS, is auctioning a breakfast with three of the world's most celebrated cartoonists. The lucky winner will share an uncomfortably small booth with Ivan Brunetti, Seth Chris, and Chris Ware in White River Junction's storied Polka Diner. The cartoonist will also draw on the winner's sketchbook during breakfast. The winner will also receive a tour of the Center for Cartoon Studies. The auction is a fundraiser for the CCS Student Scholarship Fund. The three cartoonists will be visiting CCS for several days to work with students, lecture, and discuss the making of comics. The online auction begins on eBay.com Wednesday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. Gagin Studios announces new website. Gagin Studios, the Atlanta-based creative home of artists Cully Hammer of Blue Beetle and Down, Brian Stelfreeze of Matador and Gun Candy, and Carl Story of The American Way and Tom Strong, now has a spiffy new website for its 15th anniversary. Gagin has long been a staple of the comic book industry. Now fans can go to www.gaginstudios.com to find out more about the studio, read latest studio news, and check out an extra-large gallery. These have been your top headlines for the week of March 6th. For the full version of these and other stories, go to AroundComics.com, your home for comic news, reviews, and opinions. Okay, guys, there's our news headlines for the week. Not a real heavy week for news, but I really did like the news that Dead at 17 is going to have a new ongoing series.
I just picked up that the first digest on that. It's an interesting little read. It's got elements of a lot of different things in it, sort of Buffy-ish and different things, but cool art, and you know, I think there's a certain niche for that book. There's certainly an audience for that.
Mark, is that a book that sells pretty well at the store?
Why, no. Actually, it doesn't.
Is that one that you like?
I'm sure it does by somebody. It's produced, right? So, mm-hmm. It keeps having new. The last one I saw was Dead at 17, The Protectorate, which was very Buffy-ish.
All right.
Actually pretty good, but it did not sell over.
Well, moving on to the Septagon asking for submissions from all those freelance artists out there. Might be a good idea to check us out at AroundComics.com, and you can look into more on that story and artwork. Next story, Black Hole being turned into a movie. Have either one of you guys read Black Hole?
Why, no.
No, I have not.
I have flipped through it. I have not read it. It's one of those, here, whenever we talked to Phil Hester, he said that was his favorite book. And you can buy it Amazon.com, wherever. It's a hardcover. It's like 26, 27 bucks. And everyone that I've talked to that has read it said it's amazing. So that will be interesting. They had also announced, a month ago, that Torso was going to be adapted. And, Sal, who's going to be directing that?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't remember.
Directed 7.
Oh,
Fincher?
Not David Fincher. Is it David Fincher?
I think it is.
Yeah, David
so
Fincher.
Another,
he did Fight Club and...
Yeah.
And 7 and all those interesting... Yeah, that's an interesting choice. I mean, I love his style of movies. I mean, I love Fight Club and 7, but I'm not sure how he's going to... I mean, you know, Torso's a period piece. More, you know, of a noir-ish kind of thing.
Well, that's what made me think of Torso whenever we were talking about Black Hole, is because it's a very kind of like dark, gritty, and I can actually see Fincher doing that one.
Yeah, I don't know. Black Hole, I mean, I haven't read it, so I don't know much about it, so I don't know.
I thought it was a remake of the Disney movie. So I had no idea.
I've heard it's good, but I don't know. I have two kids, so I don't know if I need any more teen angst.
It's very angst. It's what, like, about teenagers that turn into monsters, but it's really more about their despair and angst.
So you may want to read this, because it's in the future.
Is it a guide for killing them when they...
That's true, when they turn.
It's about 13, 14, maybe.
Yeah. Next story.
Where's the X, honey?
Nice. The Marvel exhibition that's going to be debuting out in Los Angeles. This looks, for anyone in the Chicago area, I'm going to look into if this is going to be at the Museum of Science and Industry, because that sounds like a perfect exhibit for them. Kind of neat that Marvel is going to have an exhibit like this.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. The science of superheroics, I guess, is what it's called, or superheroes.
Yeah, I wonder if one of the parts will be walk in and they bite you with a radioactive spider.
That could be cool, and I think you might have a lawsuit on your hands. But well, I know there was a book out. There's a book out called The Physics of Superheroes.
I have it right here, actually.
Oh, there you go. So I haven't read that either, but I heard it's pretty entertaining.
And have you read it, Mark?
I just got it about 2 weeks ago, and I put it away and just found it today, so I was cleaning out my office, so that's why it's sitting directly next to me.
I was going to say, we were talking about marketing in comics, and this seems like a perfect marketing push by Marvel to do a big exhibition. I've seen them doing some other stuff. They've got the Marvel Superheroes Team of the Year if you go onto an Office Mac. And so it seems like a lot of interesting things that are reaching the everyday people.
Yeah, but the problem is they'll be selling, you know, plush toys and you know, little lunch boxes with Spider-Man's face on it and not actually comic books at the gift shop in the museum. So, I don't know. Marketing efforts is one thing, but it's, you know, is it turning it into actual readers in any way? I'm not sure.
Yeah, only time will tell. Infinite Crisis, second printing. I don't think that's really big news, but I did want to ask Mark. I keep seeing in, like, Wizard and whatnot that these sketch variant second printings are actually more valuable than some of the first printings.
For certain books. Doesn't always happen. I mean, the biggest example of that was the Batman, Jim Lee, Jeff Loeb, or Ben Azzarello. Mm-hmm. Their second printing. It wasn't actually the sketch cover, but sometimes the second printings just become, or just more rare, that's all.
It just...
so many of the first one.
I'm getting well, sorry, I just had a big thunderclap behind me. It's like apocalypse here.
Hey, Mark, let me ask you a question. With stuff like that, with books that sell out or variant cover stuff, does your shop have a policy as to like how long they keep that on the shelf before they, you know, they bag it and mark it up?
6 months.
6 months. Wow, that's pretty. Because I've seen shops that, I mean, literally. The day after something has come out, it's, you know, it's marked up already because they know it's, you know, sold out at Diamond or it's already on eBay, that kind of thing. So that's...
It is if I have to buy from a secondary distributor. So, because the cost is usually a little higher. A couple of books we've done that too. We had Batman Year 100. The first mm-hmm. issue we're selling for $10 and we are selling them.
Jeez, I got one I could sell you.
Yeah, but it's not like that's a huge markup. That came out, it was, what, $5?
It was $6.99.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's only a couple of bucks, but it's just the point of making up for the price difference. Certain books, it happens to quicker.
Right.
But our average is 6 months.
That's good. That's a good policy.
But once again, a way to go to Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles in the beautiful downtown, or Open Square location in Chicago. There's a little plug for you, Mark.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
We'll move on to DCS auction on eBay. I'll have to look at the story. I didn't know exactly where that was taking place. But kind of nice that working on a benefit through an eBay auction.
It's cool. Who are those artists?
Indie guys. those are all
cartoonists.
Yeah. Very popular. I don't know. I'm personally, you know, the last thing I want to do is have a breakfast with those three guys, because if their work is any indication of the type of people they are, it would be one of the most, you know, self-degrading, just sort of narcissistic,
I bet you they don't
loathing, you know, I mean, it just, no thanks. I don't want to be involved in it. But I think it's cool that they're doing that anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was a good idea. The last item we had on the news, not a huge story, but Gaijin Studios has relaunched their new website. I think digging deeper into the story, the big thing is that it portal into their forum, which it sounds like the forum is quite the place on the internet.
I haven't checked that one out yet, but I'm sure I will.
I like some of the titles that those artists work on. Yeah, Tom Strong's a great book.
Who were the other artists on that one?
Oh, you're going to make me laugh.
Was that Brian Stelfreeze? And
yes.
Okay.
Well, that will do it for our... Mm-hmm.
I love the guy. I mean, The Matador is a fantastic book. I know I pushed the hell out of that book. And he finally, the last issue came out, because I guess he broke his drawing arm. But there was a slight delay.
That'll put a cramp in your drawing style.
Just a little bit.
All right, that'll take care of our wire-to-wire comic news. It's time for Top of the Stack.
Top of the stack.
All right, my Top of the Stack this week is Fell by Warren Ellis and Ben Templesmith. It is under the Image imprint, and the cover price is actually one of the big selling points of it. It is $1.99, dollar off your regular comic issues. Another very interesting thing about Fell is that it's 22 pages with absolutely no advertisements. So from page 1 to page 22, you get no interruptions in the story. It really does help to dive into the feeling of this story. It is a very dark, very... it's hard to describe. If you've read anything that Ben Templesmith has done, he has a very very eerie feeling to his work, like 30 Days a Night. This isn't quite as abstract as that, but it is a very eerie feeling. It is a story about Detective Richard Fell, who is a police officer in a larger metropolitan area across the river from... let me see. What is the...
I don't know that they've ever said what the city is that they're across from. He's in Snowtown is the...
Snowtown is where he comes to. And apparently something happens in the city that he is a detective in. He has to transfer to Snowtown, and he is, what, one of 3.5 detectives there?
They have 3.5 detectives.
Him, 2 other detectives, and then a detective that has no legs. But what I love about Fell is that each story is fairly self-contained. It is one single story of him trying to solve a crime in Snowtown, and there is kind of an overlapping story arc trying to figure out who Detective Fell is, what happened to make him come into Snowtown, and so there is that history which you get little bits and pieces in each story. But overall, it is just a fun, gritty, kind of mystery noir, but it's totally Warren Ellis. If you're an Ellis fan, probably all reading this. One of the fun things about the book are the letter in the back. Probably the best letter column in comics. Always very fun little anecdotes from Ellis, and there's quite the online community that talks about it. So, Fell, my top of the stack.
And a good top of the stack it was.
I'm reading that book also by Ellis, and it is an interesting concept that he's doing with this smaller format, smaller cover price. I know there's been some complaints from retailers that it, you know, it takes up the same amount of space as other books, but it, you know, it, they're making less money on it. But as a consumer, I don't care. So I'm enjoying it, and that's it.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, me too.
It's nice to have a lower price book for people. So there, you just push it more. People will buy more copies of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it seems like. That makes sense to me, but there's been people complaining. I know that. My top of the stack this week is Ultimate Spider-Man number 91 by Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Bagley, with John Dell as inker and Justin Ponsor as the colorist. You know, I picked this book for two reasons. One, you know, Bendis and Bagley have done 91 issues of Ultimate Spider-Man, and overall, this series has been really good. You know, there's been some arcs that, you know, had its down points, and not every issue is fantastic, but very solid 91 issues, and in today's world of comics, it's very rare that you get both an artist and writer to work for that long on one character in one series. So for that reason, I wanted to sort of give some props to those guys, because I think because they're putting out something consistent, they may get overlooked a little bit from time and again. Secondly, I wanted to point out, because I really did like this issue. Firstly, the art I thought was fantastic. I don't know if it's because I think they recently switched from a bi-weekly schedule to a monthly schedule, and so Bagley has some more time to work on the art, but I just thought in this particular issue was some of the best work by him that I've seen, and it was really fun to read, and a lot of the different things with the characters in it that he... You know, the choices he made were interesting to see, and I just really like the artwork on it. But also, I like the story a lot. It sort of set you up a little bit in the beginning, but didn't leave you guessing too long, which I liked with the kind of new Spider Girl. Who's this new Spider Girl? Which we find out later is actually not a new Spider Girl, but Kitty Pryde. And the whole relationship between Peter Parker and Kitty Pryde is something I really am enjoying reading, because it's different, and you know, it's not the same old Peter and Mary Jane thing. It's this new new sort of thing with two teen superheroes dating, and it's more interesting to me. And it was just a good fun book to read. I think kids can absolutely read it in today's, you know, comics, where there's so much stuff that isn't kid-friendly. This certainly is, but yet it's got serious enough issues. It deals with, you know, Peter Parker's issues as well as Spider-Man's issues. It's got some danger and action and jokes and everything. It's got a little bit of everything, and it's just a good, solid book that these guys put out every month, and I don't know if they get enough credit for it. So that is my pick.
I really enjoy that issue, actually.
I'm sorry, what you guys kind of talked over.
What was that, Matt?
I really enjoyed that issue. I've been enjoying Ultimate Spider-Man these last few issues, and I like the relationship between him and Kitty Pryde. I think you're exactly right on target about the that whole relationship. It's not Mary Jane. It's not the same old Gilmore Girls episode of Spider-Man.
Don't be talking bad about Gilmore Girls.
Nothing wrong with the show. My wife loves it.
I know a lot of women that love that show.
Yeah, including Chris.
Thanks. You know, you want to look at it. It's 91 issues. That is an amazingly long run on one book by one artist and one writer. So there's a lot of credit that has to go out for them doing that.
And they were never bi-weekly. They were just like, it was like 14 issues a year.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah, 14. It was a really odd schedule.
It felt like it was coming out every 2 weeks, though.
Yeah, it did seem like it for a while. It felt like it was
I think at periods it may have, actually, but it's a really odd schedule. It's the only Bendis book that shows up on time.
What was your pick this week, Mark?
I actually picked Batman Year 100. It's that new 4-issue miniseries, well, prestige miniseries from DC by indie artist Paul Pope, who... created THB. He's done stories in Dark Horse Comics called, you know, One Trick Ripoff. He did a solo issue for DC and a book called 100%. He's a really interesting artist, and I like this story. It basically started off with the story's based in the year 2039, 100 years after the original appearance of the first Batman. A federal agent was killed, and this mysterious Batman character is a suspect in it. The country itself is under, you know, martial rule. It's very, you know, George Orwellian kind of future. Everybody's kind of tagged, registered, all except for this one Batman person that they can't tell who it is. The only pictures they have of him, you know, they're nighttime res pictures, but they're low res or blurred. It's kind of like looking at old pictures of Bigfoot back in the 70s. So, you know, he looks animalistic. Nobody's quite sure if he's an animal, if he's what he is. Nobody's quite sure. And it doesn't give you a lot. It gives you enough to kind of hook you. You know, very intriguing and makes me want to read the next issue. So, I really enjoyed the very first issue. I've already told a lot of people about it. A lot of people have come in asking about it that don't normally buy comics in our store. So it seems to be kind of drawing people in, which is great. But I really enjoyed the issue a lot. It was something different. The art was definitely different. But it really worked for this book.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I thought, you know, Pope did a great job of, you know, not really retelling a story. I mean, you know, this story's sort of been told already, you know, with Batman, with Dark Knight mm-hmm. Returns, but he was able to add something else that it was interesting. It was like, well, who is this Batman? Who is this Bruce Wayne? Is it someone else? Who is this? And it did make it interesting and intriguing. And same thing. I want to read the next one. I want to see what's going on with it.
Well, there was a future tech feel to it that Dark Returns didn't have. And Pope's going to have to send us, you know, free issues. It's the second time that Batman Year 100 has been on the top of the stack. So it's I think it is an excellent book, and I'm looking forward to issue two. I hope that the rest of the series is as good as the first one, and if it is, then I think it's going to be best.
Yeah, number two is actually coming out Wednesday. Actually,
something to look forward to. All right, well, that will do it for our top of the stack. I have a couple quick emails. We put out on the forum a call for emails, and people responded en masse. I'm going to read a couple quick ones. First one is from Bob Riedel. I probably just butchered Bob's name, but he goes by JLA Fan on the forum. He says, great discussion on the DCU. I look forward to the Marvel show next week. One request. The indie spotlight, get some smaller stuff and not just Force and Image, which only marginally qualifies in my book. I think of them as kind of little tier between Big Two and actual small press. I'll jump in and say that our show next week is going to be focusing on indie, and one of the discussions is going to be on what exactly an indie book is. So, Bob, we are right there with you on that. He says, goes on and says, by the way, thanks for the recommendation of the manga Monster in episode 5. Bought it yesterday and read it last night. Loved it. 15-year-old son read it and was not too keen on it. I think he'll be sticking to Naruto and Death Note, but I'm a fan and will be picking up the subsequent issues for myself. Then we got another email from our friend Bruce Rosenberger, who goes by Bruce R. on the forum. He says, it's another Monster thank you. He says, I want to thank Matt for recommending Monster, the manga book. Thank goodness, finally something aimed at an older audience. Bought it, devoured it. Best part is that I got on the rewards program at the local chain bookstore that's getting me some decent discounts every week. Picked up Long Halloween for 25%. I look forward to buying this week at 30%. Nice. Says, best regards, Bruce, and also check out my podcast at comicscast.libsyn.com. And I'd like to throw out a thank you to Bruce. He gave us some great talk on his podcast, which is Comics Cast. We appreciate that. And Bruce will actually be our guest next week whenever we talk about Indy. So those are my email readings and announcements. Sal, do you have anything for us before we wrap up today?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you very much for joining us again. You'll see me on Wednesday, and I'm sure we'll have you on the show again very soon.
No problem. Thanks for having me again.
All right. And to all the listeners out there, thank you for checking out Around Comics. Remember to check us out on the web at aroundcomics.com. Feel free to drop us a line at info@aroundcomics.com or visit us on our forum, which is so pleasantly hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys. You can find that at either aroundcomics.com, click on forum, or go to Comic Geek Speak and click on their forum button. So thank you and have a great week.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.